Good morning, Vox. It is such a blessing to be before you all today. I'm going to take advantage of the privilege I have by having the microphone, so to speak, and extend a thank you to this community for its love and support of my family these past few months. It has been immensely felt and appreciated. Despite our physical separation this year, I am so grateful for the ways in which this community's presence remains. Y'all have been grace personified. So back to that in a bit. Before I get started this morning, I wanted to offer a disclaimer, perhaps a little caveat, that the words I've landed on today are simply me speaking to myself. Selfishly, I wanted to explore something I'm still in the throes of, still seeking wisdom about. Like all of us, I don't have the answers, but perhaps in this exercise of navigating what grace could look like, we will all come to a deeper understanding of what God is asking of us, as well as what God is extending to us in this moment. So Vox, on this morning, I want you to consider what grace looks like to you. When you consider grace manifested, what does it feel like? Think of a word or a few words and post them in the chat. Thank y'all so much for sharing. Well, I thought I'd share a few definitions that spoke to me in my studies. Let's start with the Webster Dictionary and what they offer. Grace is a virtue coming from God, a state of sanctification enjoyed through divine assistance. Then these words are offered as synonyms or substitutes: approval, favor, pardon, a disposition to or an act or instance of kindness, courtesy, or clemency, getting what you don't deserve. Then the most reliable source of all time, Wikipedia, defines it as freely given, unmerited favor and love of God. The influence or spirit of God operating in humans to regenerate or strengthen them, the condition of being in God's favor. And John Grisham Mecken, an early 20th century theological scholar, said it like this: the very center and core of the whole Bible is the doctrine of the grace of God. Grace is the love of God shown to the unlovely, the peace of God given to the restless, the unmerited favor of God. A shorthand for what grace is: it's mercy, not merit. I was particularly moved by the assertion of grace being a manifestation of the peace of God and an unmerited favor. Just saying those words out loud brings me to a place of exhale, knowing that despite our failings, despite the chaos of this unprecedented year, our God offers us peace and favor. In the scripture we read earlier in Ezekiel, we are reminded of God as the Prince of Peace. In verse 13, it reads, "I will bring them out from the nations and gather them from the countries, and I will bring them to their own lands." Then it goes, "I will tend them in good pasture, and the mountain heights of Israel will be their grazing lands. There they will lie down in good grazing lands, and there they will feed in rich pasture on the mountains of Israel." Here, God lets us know that despite our exile, despite our pitfalls, he will seek us, claim us, and reposition us in a space of safety and even abundance, meeting our needs and then some. Now, that is surely love. That is surely grace. Well, I'm not sure if y'all heard, but there was an election a few short weeks ago, an election that served to uncover and reveal deep-seated atrocities of injustice, unveil and widen division, perhaps question our love for a country, let alone humanity. It offered a visceral picture of pains never acknowledged, truths and histories never confronted, and national traumas never healed or reconciled. And as a Black woman in America, it stirred up feelings of being unseen, unheard, or uncared for, a sentiment I know shared by many people of color, shared by people whose identities and humanity have historically been ignored or undermined. Now, I got in my feelings on several occasions in what I'm sure we would all consider the most productive and healthy way possible, via Twitter. During one of those healthy vent sessions, I offered the idea that people of color continue to bear the brunt of the harsh and unjust realities of America, and yet continue to have to show up to lead that disruption, to lead that fight. Activist Brittany Packnett shared a similar interpretation, speaking on the ongoing pain and position of anti-Blackness in America, the church notwithstanding. These sentiments birthed out of lived experience and observation can move us to a place of resentment, frustration, and a deep desire to see God move radically. Further in Ezekiel, we read in verses 15 and 16, "I myself will tend my sheep and have them lie down, declares the sovereign Lord. I will search for the lost and bring back the strays. I will bind up the injured and strengthen the weak. But the sleek and the strong I will destroy. I will shepherd the flock with justice." Here God reminds us of his grace, his mercy, and they are reflections of his love. But note, they are not divorced from that of justice, that in fact, perhaps they are interwoven, interdependent. He promises us that he will shepherd his people with justice, just as he works to ease our pain and strengthen our weaknesses. It is that knowledge that has given me some relief as I sort through my own feelings that I will offer in transparency to you today. Perhaps you can relate or it will resonate. Throughout this year, despite ongoing reminders that this country was not built with many of us in mind and does not easily bend or cater to us, the call for unity has been shared in both political and community spaces, as well as spaces of faith and specifically the Christian community. In the days leading up to and after the election, not just were pains acknowledged, but there was actually a wide call for reconciliation and forgiveness and grace being asked from many of us. I, like many of you, perhaps struggled and continue to struggle with what that looks like and how we can live that out. Clint Smith, a race scholar, offered it like this: "Unity is grace, but freedom is better. So if you're asking us to come together and that means my world doesn't change, I don't want that kind of unity." What Clint shared is a sentiment very familiar to me, one that questions the request for grace for a paradigm or a community that has not prioritized my own freedom, my own safety, my own value. But it is interesting to clarify the difference between unity and grace. That exploration sparked a conversation with a dear friend of mine just a few days after the election. She had posted on Instagram a calling to her tens of thousands of followers to extend radical grace to those in their community, those in their family who had voted differently from them. She experienced some backlash for the post and her followers' comments and reached out to me for some insight or perhaps comfort in the response. I shared the following text with her, letting her know I did not intellectually disagree with her call to action, but emotionally and even spiritually, I related to some of the folks who jumped into her comments. I responded, "Radical grace is important and something that God proves and troves, but asking folks today to begin to consider that is a lot. We're not even a week beyond, and so asking folks who are deeply hurt and traumatized, not just by votes of political difference, but by loved ones who have voted for a country that doesn't fundamentally honor their humanity. I think that we have to create space for this context in this country is righteous indignation and dignified anger. Just as radical grace is modeled by God, so is grief. And maybe it's okay to let people sit in their feelings for a bit." And while I stand by what I shared with her that Sunday morning, having had time to reflect and seek out what and how God has modeled radical grace, I wonder if we could reframe what grace actually is asking of us. In the Message Bible, Ezekiel 34:11 reads like this: "I myself will make sure that they get plenty of rest. I'll go after the lost, I'll collect the strays, I'll doctor the injured, I'll build up the weak ones and oversee the strong ones so they're not exploited." God shows us the many facets of grace. He even demonstrates that grace can show up as mercy, as favor, as our healing, as our active posture of love. It's impossible to discuss adequately God's grace without also mentioning love and mercy. These three attributes are inextricably linked. So when considering what this looks like, I thought back to the summer when I broke my ankle. And I think we might have a picture of this. 3 months in of recalibrating life to adjust to a global pandemic, and in a moment where I was seeking reprieve from the news of another unarmed Black person being murdered, I escaped with some outdoor activities. Now, I don't know if it's important to ask if I was qualified for such outdoor activities, but it did result in me dislocating my ankle and fracturing my fibula. I clearly need to take skating lessons from Harmon. Shout out to Fiona Skills on the board. As I think back to the frustration, the pain, and the chaos of that moment, I'm also reminded the grace God extended me. I broke my ankle only 1 month shy of leaving UT, and thus the blessing of incredible healthcare coverage. I broke my ankle in a moment that the world was asking us to be still, and thus I did not miss out or disrupt my work. and it prepared me for another dimension of grace, the grace we extend and show to ourselves, the grace that looks like self-love, the type of grace God models of patience, resiliency, and love to the parts of us that need it, even when we don't deserve it. Davia Roberts, a wonderful therapist out of DC, said it like this past week when exploring the depths of racial trauma. Healing isn't always complex, but it is always intentional. Like my ankle, where I had to be intentionally still, intentionally diligent, intentionally restful, intentionally patient, intentionally allow part of me to heal, allow bones to be realigned and reconciled. I wondered if God had a similar calling for his people in the midst of political chaos, community fracture, and perhaps even interpersonal resentment. That perhaps in pursuit of justice and accountability, we leave space for grace. We leave space for peace, and we leave space for radical love. Perhaps leave space for forgiveness even, knowing that we are in relationship with God. We are in relationship with a God that is both gracious and yet also a God that promises us justice. Perhaps in this season, we are being asked to love ourselves more and love one another differently. Perhaps in this season, even as we seek justice, equity, and hold one another and our leaders accountable, we allow grace to abound. Not because folks or this country are deserving, but because it is the spiritual tissue that will allow us to find healing and peace. Writer Anne Lamott reassures us in saying it like this: I do not at all understand the mystery of grace, only that it meets us where we are, but does not leave us where it found us. Let that resonate for a second. Vox, where is grace leading us? Where is grace leaving us in this season? Just as God tends to us in good pasture, just as God feeds us in rich pastures, in spite of us, in spite of the chaos we create in this world, how will we offer grace to ourselves? How will we extend grace to one another this week and as we gather for the holidays? With mask on, of course. Remembering that grace is not earned and that grace does not dismiss our pain or others' wrongdoing, but in fact, it is in company with justice. God offers it to us poignantly in Romans 5:20. All that passing laws against sin did was produce more lawbreakers, but sin didn't and doesn't have a chance in competition with the aggressive forgiveness we call grace. When it's sin versus grace, grace wins hands down. And this is the good part. All sin can do is threaten us with death, and that's the end of it. Grace, because God is putting everything together again through the Messiah, invites us into a life that goes on and on and on, world without end. So perhaps as you reflect on the questions we posit to you in a few seconds, you substitute grace for something else. Perhaps as you pursue these ideas, you consider what loving yourself in this moment looks like. Perhaps you consider what loving one another looks like despite friction, despite fracture, and despite the fight for justice. Knowing that we serve a gracious God, but we also serve a just God. Before we close, Vox, I wanted to posit the same thoughts to you in a form that always resonates with me in the gift of song. As you listen to this song, may you reflect that God's grace is an unexplainable love as a miracle. And as we listen to this song, there'll be a few questions for you to reflect on.
Without no hesitation, you became my resurrection. All the light that came shining in. And I got beauty for ashes. And I got joy for mourning. And I got praise for heaviness. Love is a miracle. And I got beauty for ashes. And I got joy for mourning. And I got praise for heaviness. Love is a miracle. This is more than religion. Glad I made my decisions. Hope reversed the curse I was walking in. Glow. Where you lead me, I will follow.
So, Vox, in acknowledging that love is indeed a miracle, here's to a fresh grace every day for ourselves and for one another. Amen.